morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Wednesday, February the 23rd, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. Police in the Central African Republic have detained four French soldiers who are in the United Nations peacekeeping mission in the country.
The four men were in the security escort of French General Stéphane Marchenoir, the UN peacekeeping mission chief of staff.
And a coalition of Nigerian activists demonstrated in the capital, Abuja. They're calling on President Muhammadu Buhari to sign a bill to improve transparency, inclusion, and planning for national elections.
President Buhari, in case you do not know, people with disabilities have to crawl on the ground because of inaccessible polling units to vote for you.
And South Africa is sending fresh troops and armored vehicles to Mozambique's northern Cabo Delgado province as part of efforts to fight Islamic State-connected insurgents. We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, police in the Central African Republic have detained four French soldiers who are in the United Nations peacekeeping mission in the country, MINUSCA. The arrests sparked false rumors that France had attempted to assassinate the CAR's president. Carol Valade reports from Bangui, Central African Republic.
In the Central African Republic, four French military personnel with the UN peacekeeping mission were arrested Monday at the airport in Bangui. The four men were in the security escort of French General Stéphane Marchenoir, the UN peacekeeping mission chief of staff. Marchenoir was at the airport for a time Monday before CAR President Faustin Archange Touadéra was due to return from a trip to Belgium. After Marchenoir departed, the four soldiers were arrested. President Touadéra's plane landed a half hour following the arrest. The soldiers remained in custody Tuesday, and police have not given a reason for their arrest. However, pictures of the French soldiers, their UN identification, and their military equipment have flooded social media accounts across Africa, along with a message accusing France of attempting to assassinate Touadéra. A Central African website, known for its ties with Russian interests in Bangui, was among the sites posting the allegations. The French embassy in Bangui and the UN mission in the CAR condemned what they called a misinformation campaign. The UN statement said, MINUSCA regrets this incident and condemns its instrumentalization on social media in an attempt to manipulate public opinion. It firmly rejects the accusation of attack against state security. CAR authorities have refused to comment on the incident. Carol Valade for VOA News, Bangui, Central African Republic.
A coalition of Nigerian activists demonstrated Tuesday in the capital city, Abuja, demanding President Muhammadu Buhari sign a bill that aims to improve transparency, inclusion, and planning for national elections. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
More than 200 participants from various civil society groups chanted as they converged at Unity Fountain Tuesday in Abuja. The activists are demanding President Muhammadu Buhari sign into law a bill that will promote the early release of funds for elections, the inclusion of marginalized groups in voting, and would authorize the electronic transmission of election results. Paul James is one of the organizers of the protest.
In 2019, one truth that we are not telling Nigerians is that resources were released very close to the election, to at least 6 weeks to the election. They say this is coming close to the election. It affects everybody that is working on the process.
Activists of the protest say the new bill will make elections more organized, inclusive, and credible if signed into law. There are more than 30 million Nigerians living with disabilities. Grace Jerry is Executive Director, Inclusive Friends Association, a group representing disabled citizens at the protest.
Election after election, people with disabilities have to surmount whatever challenge it is to vote. President Buhari, in case you do not know, people with disabilities have to crawl on the ground because of inaccessible polling units to vote for you. People who are visually impaired, who are blind, had to rely on somebody to help them to vote and could not experience what is called the secret ballot processes.
The president's office released a statement late Monday denying claims of foot dragging in Buhari signing the bill. The president's spokesperson Femi Adesina said the president had only received the bill from the Senate on January 31st and had until March 1st to sign it. He also said interest groups were taking advantage of what they consider a delay in the signing of the electoral bill by the president to foment civil disorder. During an interview Tuesday with Lagos-based Channels Television, Adesina said Buhari would sign the bill soon. But protester Paul James has doubts the president will follow through.
The government has not been very truthful with Nigerians. They have been dilly-dallying with what we thought will help to improve on the transparency and integrity of our elections. Like since 1999, the more money you pump into the election, the less participation you see in the election.
Allegations of rigging and corruption are common during Nigerian elections. Activists say the president already has declined to sign the bill 5 times and are hoping he will sign it this time round. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
UN and international aid agencies are racing to minimize the impact of Tropical Storm Emnati, which is expected to hit eastern Madagascar sometime this week. Emnati will be the 4th tropical cyclone to impact the island nation in about 4 weeks. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Emnati is the 4th powerful storm to strike Madagascar in as many weeks. It is likely to have a devastating effect on thousands of people who still are reeling from the impact of tropical cyclone Batsirai, which struck central Madagascar on February 5th. Batsirai affected an estimated 270,000 people. The United Nations reports 20,500 homes were destroyed, flooded, or damaged, rendering some 21,000 people homeless. The World Meteorological Organization predicts Emnati will produce destructive wind speeds of between 150 and 200 kilometers an hour. While this is dangerous, WMO spokeswoman Claire Nullis says one of the biggest threats is water, the heavy rainfalls that kill.
You know, there's a risk they'll cause bad flooding and landslides in the region. And as I said, this region has been hit by successive tropical storms. You know, it's flooded. It's, the land is waterlogged. It can't absorb any more water. So, you know, any more rainfall at this stage is just, you know, one drop too many.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs previously had sent several disaster management experts to Madagascar to respond to Cyclone Batsirai. OCHA spokesman Jens Laerke says additional staff from the region is being deployed in the country in anticipation of Emnati.
We're in a race against time to protect those who dealt with the fury of the first 3 extreme weather events from the impact of Emnati. The response covers health consultations, distribution of cash and hot meals to displaced families, restoration of access to clean water, and provision of shelter items to support families to return home.
OCHA is providing $2.5 million from the UN Central Emergency Response Fund. The money will be used for food and cash assistance, emergency health care, shelter, and other essential relief. The World Food Program also has deployed additional teams to respond to Emnati. The agency says it is providing food rations to more than 3,500 people who have sought refuge ahead of the cyclone. WFP says information technology experts also have been deployed in the area for immediate intervention. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Authorities in Burkina Faso are investigating an explosion at a gold mine site which killed at least 59 people. That is according to reports by state broadcaster RTB and witnesses. Monday's blast injured at least 100 other people in the southwest village of Gomborora. The explosion is believed to have been caused by chemicals used to treat gold that were stocked at the mine. Mining experts say the small-scale mines have fewer regulations than usual industrial ones and thus could be more dangerous. Burkina Faso is the fastest growing gold producer in Africa and currently the fifth largest on the continent, with gold being the country's most important export. Gambia's ambassador to the United States, Doda Fadera, died early this week after a short illness. Ambassador Fadera, a career diplomat, was in Gambia after helping repatriate the remains of Gambian immigrants who died in a Bronx fire last month. Sene Marena, the editor-in-chief of Alkamba Times, a digital platform focusing on Gambian news, he tells me that Ambassador Fadera, who was the first post-Jammeh ambassador to the U.S., played an instrumental role in the relationship between the two nations.
He was the first post-Jammeh ambassador to Washington. He got appointed by President Adama Barrow. So okay. Before then, he was also the former Secretary General and head of civil service of the Gambia, responsible for the entire civil service.
What kind of legacy does he leave behind, especially in terms of the relationship between the U.S. and the Gambia? And the Gambian diaspora, we know that he was very instrumental in repatriating the remains of the Gambians who died in that apartment fire in the Bronx earlier this year.
Being a seasoned and experienced personality, Ambassador Fadera strengthened trust and confidence in Banjul-Washington bilateral relationship. He brings the embassy closer to Gambian communities across the U.S. He also led many community outreach programs, where he explained the role of the embassy and how issues affecting them can be addressed by the embassy. So one of his achievements at the Washington embassy, he successfully worked on many projects that have impacted on the lives of ordinary Gambians. Example of it is the 25 million threshold program under the U.S. Millennium Challenge Corporation, the MCC. So he secured the funding of that project to boost the Gambia's universal energy access by 2025.
And what has been the reaction to his death from the government of Gambia and from Gambians in the diaspora of whom he served?
Gambians from all walks of life have been mourning the demise of this seasoned diplomat. The government of the Gambia, through the office of the president, issued a statement, describing, Mr. Fadera has a great Gambian who contributed positively in trying to make the image Gambia's image in the global arena. So his loss is a great loss to the Gambia's diplomatic service and the entire civil service. So Mr. Fadera recently, also played a key role in trying to repatriate the victims of the New York Bronx fire incident that happened last month. So he was in Banjul. So he died at the Royal Victoria Teaching Hospital in Banjul.
That was Sene Marena, the editor-in-chief of Alkamba Times, a digital platform focusing on Gambian news. I reached him in Seattle in Washington. And let's go to East Africa in Kenya, where authorities say that gay students in boarding schools who violate the rights of others will be kicked out to study in their schools. Kenya's Education Cabinet Secretary George Magoha says the move will make it easier for parents to monitor their students. However, LGBTQ activists in Kenya are criticizing the minister for being prejudiced and say that his sentiments put homosexual students at risk. Maureen Ojambo has more on this story.
If you are a homosexual in a boarding school and you are hopping from a bed of another student to another, you are right to end there.
This statement by Kenya's Education Cabinet Secretary George Magoha has received mixed reactions, with some supporting his sentiments while others criticize it. LGBTQ activists in Kenya says Magoha's statements puts gay students at risk. Magoha has repeatedly said that homosexuals violate the rights of others in boarding schools by having sex with either gay or heterosexual students and will have to go to day school for close monitoring.
You can be a homosexual, a good homosexual, who doesn't disturb anybody. You go and do your thing when you're out of school. Oh, I'm not against homosexuals, but if you are going to move, like the ones we have found from moving from one, two, three, four beds, those ones we have proclaimed that they shall be day scholars. That will put them closer to their parents, who I think have the first responsibility to talk to them. There's nothing unfair there. Who has told you to go and disturb another person's child who is living there? Why don't you wait until you go home, go to the streets and do whatever you want to do?
Many Kenyan boarding schools are segregated by gender, and there is no law that bars gay students from going to any school of their choice. Magoha's warning comes days after a high school boy in one of Nairobi boarding schools was allegedly sodomized. In Kenya, it's illegal for men or women to have same-sex relations. According to Section 165 of the country's penal code, it is a felony for a male to commit any act of gross indecency with another male, whether in public or in private. This is punishable by 5 years imprisonment. LGBTQ activist Marylise Buba says Magoha's sentiments are discriminatory.
It is very barbaric what T.S. Magoha keeps on saying about LGBTQ learners being removed from boarding school. First of all, it's unconstitutional. He has to understand that according to our constitution on human rights, it is wrong to discriminate against anyone on the basis of their sexual orientations on that basis. And that by virtue of him saying LGBTQ kids should be removed from school, it means he's violating their right to access education in their institutions of choices. If he's going to protect children from having sex, he should protect all children, heterosexual children and LGBTQ children.
This is the second time that Magoha has issued the warning. His first statement led to LGBTQ protest in Nairobi. Buba says the government should come up with laws that protect homosexual children.
It's about time as a country we begin to understand that we exist, I exist, I'm a lesbian, I exist, I have rights. As long as I'm a tax-paying citizen in Kenya, I have rights, and I shouldn't be denied rights. In this case, like for children being denied rights to education. We have a petition that we've put out. We are calling everyone to come out and sign that petition. That is the only way that will guarantee safety for LGBTQ children in school. And LGBTQ children have right to education. They have a right to be in schools, schools of their choices, schools that their parents are paying school fees for them. And Magoha should instead come up with laws that protect these children.
In May 2019, the High Court judges of Kenya issued a unanimous ruling that the law that criminalizes same-sex relations does not violate the Constitution, and so refused an order to declare Section 162 and 165 unconstitutional. Kenya does not recognize any relationships between persons of the same sex, and the country has banned same-sex marriages under the Kenyan Constitution since 2010. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiombo in Sacramento, California.
Daybreak Africa continues. South Africa is sending fresh troops and armored vehicles to Mozambique's northern Cabo Delgado province as part of efforts to fight Islamic State-connected insurgents. Vicky Stark reports from Cape Town, South Africa.
The deployment is part of the Southern African Development Community, SADC's, military intervention, which started in July last year. More than 3,000 SADC and Rwandan troops have been sent to Mozambique to fight against Islamic State-connected insurgents. The conflict has claimed more than 3,000 lives and displaced 800,000 people. The South African National Defence Forces spokesperson, Brigadier General Andries Mahapa, says the fresh troops will be deployed soon.
We are just confirming the mode of transport. It could be air, land or sea. Remember, in terms of security, we cannot really come out straight to say we are traveling through by land or so forth, because that will compromise us. But we are combat ready to deploy.
The joint force is known as the Southern African Development Community Mission in Mozambique, or SAMIM. Willem Els, security analyst and counterterrorism trainer from the Institute of Security Studies, says to this point, South Africa has mainly sent special forces to Mozambique. He says that will change with the latest deployment.
They now are sending in some mechanized infantry. They're sending in some parabats. They're sending in some of your pathfinder troops, as well as some of the special forces. So it is a more balanced contingent that is moving in to go and stabilize the situation even further.
Other SADC members with forces in Mozambique include Botswana, Lesotho, Angola, and Zambia. Rwanda deployed a separate force on the invitation of Mozambican President Philippe Nyusi. It's believed Rwanda is being backed by the French government as French energy company Total Energies SC has a huge gas concession in Cabo Delgado. Al says the multiplicity of forces can make things complicated.
You have the summon forces, then you have the Mozambican forces that are being deployed along with them, and then the Rwandan forces. You know, your chances of friendly fire are quite high if you have an aerial operation that overflows, etc. So fortunately, that has not happened as yet. And we also noticed that there is real effort that has been put in terms of SAMIM and the Rwandan forces to better coordinate and cooperate in terms of their operations.
Asked whether the force has been successful, military spokesperson Mahapa had this to say.
The force under the current situation, they are doing fairly well. Remember that it's not only South Africans. So we are, as SAMIM forces, there are successes that we are achieving. The insurgents are withdrawing. We are gaining ground.
Al says besides the military intervention, efforts must also be made to make the people of northern Mozambique feel like they are being taken care of by their government. Otherwise, he says, they're ripe for recruitment by the insurgents. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
Ghana is normally seen as a beacon of press freedom in West Africa, where some governments keep a tight control on the media. But press freedom advocates note an alarming surge recently in arrests and assaults on journalists. Kent Mensah has more from Accra.
Activists are raising questions as to whether Ghana is returning to the days where criminal libel laws were used to suppress free speech. Two journalists were arrested last month after alleging the First Lady acquired state land to build a personal home. Another was arrested after accusing the president of influencing the decisions of judges in electoral petitions. All three were accused of publishing fake news, and they could face time in prison if convicted. Suleiman Abraima, the executive director of Media Foundation for West Africa, tells VOA the state is hiding behind the police to criminalize free speech.
I don't think that if the president is fundamentally opposed to something, it would happen, unless, of course, he is constrained or restrained by law. I believe that criminalizing speech and in the manner that we are seeing it is fundamentally detrimental to our democracy.
Brahma says the government should give greater powers to the National Media Commission, the agency tasked to regulate and monitor the media if it wants to assert more control of the airwaves.
I think as a country, we need to revisit that conversation about empowering the National Media Commission. The other thing is about the broadcasting law. 2 decades on, we have been talking. It's been back and forth. I think that if the government is indeed interested in sanitizing the airwaves, what we must be seeing is a very committed, strong effort at getting the broadcasting law passed so that at least people would know that, look, we have to operate within a certain confines.
Palgrave Boachidankwa, a government spokesperson on security and governance, tells VOA News the state sees the media as a partner in development and will never criminalize free speech. But he adds officials are concerned about the abuse of freedom of expression in the media. He says the journalists who accused the president and his wife of wrongdoing had no evidence.
It's clearly the rule of law that is working. It's quite unfortunate that people are abusing the freedom of speech, which as a government we are concerned about. And as a government as well, we are not trampling upon the freedom of people.
He said the media should operate without fear or favor. But he said reporters must be responsible in their reporting.
The president is very confident with freedom of speech, supports freedom of speech, encourages Ghanaians to have constructive criticism of government. I think that if you're against government, there's a civil way to go about it.
Police did not respond to requests to comment on the recent arrest of media personalities. Kent Mensah for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. You can connect with us on all social media platforms. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and on Facebook. Just search for VOA Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the announcement of sanctions against Russia by the United States and its allies in response to President Vladimir Putin's move to recognize Russian-occupied regions in eastern Ukraine as independent states. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice.